stop us, but they can.
All right, everyone. Welcome to episode 15 of the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, at Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by at Very White Guy.
And you are very white indeed.
Thank you very much.
You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. And you can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, at Interracial John. Again, that's J-A-W-N. So,
you say Tumblr? We have a Tumblr?
We do have a Tumblr.
That's new to me. You did that?
Yeah.
Wow.
We're on Tumblr, man.
Our quinceanera's got a Tumblr now.
We're taking it to the next level, eh?
Getting serious.
Absolutely.
For all two of our listeners, Juliet and Carl. Yeah. Hope you guys like Tumblr.
We might have a few more of them out there, you know.
Hey, at some point we should do the Google Analytics and kind of see, like,
if anybody's listening.
I don't know. I mean, I still like it. I'm still enjoying it.
Yeah, it's fun.
Just fun?
I love it.
I love it, too. I think it's great for you and me. I like it. It's like a dedicated time to communicate.
Yeah. And, you know, just, like, talk about stuff.
I mean, it's shit we do anyway. Might as well record it, right?
So this is, like, a rare episode. We've been away since... We've been apart from the minute we finished recording the last episode almost until right now.
Totally. And I even said to you, don't tell me about the weekend. I want to hear about it.
Right.
So I could do my podcast.
Yeah. So I went up to my hometown in Brooklyn, New York to visit my family, which was awesome.
BK.
I had a great time. It was just great chilling with the fam and getting together with all my sisters and my mom, nieces, old friends. So it was great. Good time.
Yeah, it sounded like you had a really good time.
I did. I packed a lot in, let me tell you.
Well, and I saw a bunch of pictures of you and Charlize and Faith. And, Faith's my girl, my goddaughter. Yeah. She's my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I play favorites, y'all, and she's it. So tell me about Faith. What did you guys do?
We had, like, a game night Friday night with everybody, which they do every Friday night. But because I was there, it was, like, extra big. So, like, Chris came and everybody was there. So we played a couple of games. It was really fun.
The one with the iPad where you do the...
No. These were actual board games. It was this weird game. I've never heard of it before where you ask everybody questions and then... it's a little bit like that one where you have to vote on who's the best person.
I remember that one.
So it's a little bit like that. They ask like a random question, like what would change your mood right now? And everybody writes stuff on a piece of paper and then the person... picks their favorite one, and that person gets to move forward, and then they try and match up who said the other ones, and so people get points that way, too. It's pretty fun.
And you know, I love Faith. She's my goddaughter. Did she have a meltdown?
No, during the game, everything was fine.
Whoa!
But let me tell you something.
I gotta give her a ding for that.
Zoe was so good. She kept putting these, like, super sophisticated answers, so nobody ever guessed her. It was hilarious.
Really?
Yes. I can't remember all of them, but I was like, really, Zoe? That's what you're going with?
She's always been wise beyond the years.
Yeah, tell me about it. So Faith was great, and we actually got to spend some time... Chris and ZZ and Zoe went to see like some cartoon movie. They went to the movies on Sunday. So Faith and I went and had a whole afternoon together. We went.
Oh man, I'm so jealous.
I know, really? It was fun. Yeah, we just took a long walk. I went to the farmer's market and stopped in a couple art stores and just were talking and hanging out and taking pictures and stuff. So
is that the picture you texted me? Was from that?
Yeah, it was from the walk.
She
yeah,
so happy.
She did. We had a great time. With you. Yeah, we had a lot of fun.
And did you tell me she was having, I guess, issues at school? What's
Not
going on?
Issues really, but just I was just kind of talking to her about like what parts of because she's having trouble in English, so we were talking a little bit about that and, you know, what part of it is difficult to her. Because it's not necessarily a comprehension issue, which is one thing. It's an expression one. She was saying how when she reads out loud, she understands it really well, but when she reads to herself, it's more difficult. And that she'll be able to tell you what happened, but then when she goes to write it, she's having issues. So we were talking about just kind of getting to the heart of that and then talking about looking into a specific tutor to help her with that issue, not just like somebody who studies with you, which I think has been the previous approach. So it was good because I don't know if she gets to talk that stripped down and, you know, into the nitty gritty of it with, you know, everything going on at the house and her sister and everything. So, yeah, so there's that. And then,
you know, and she's, we said Zoe's like mature for her age.
Right.
Faith's always been, I don't want to say immature, but she's, in terms of her birth date, because it's September, right? So she was just past the cutoff. So she's one of the youngest people in her grade. And I think that makes it a little bit tough.
Absolutely.
And when she was here, we were talking about school, and I tried to get her to, like, think of it as a game. And I didn't say this to her, but when I was younger, I don't even know if you know this, I always did really well at reading comprehension, like third grade, second grade, like, oh, you know, little Andy reads at the 12th grade level. And nobody knew, and I never told my mom. I cheated, but I knew the game. So it was like the old Scantron test where you had to, like, you know, fill in the questions.
Right.
So I'd go read the questions first.
Sure.
And then I'd go read the passage, right? Like, if you read the passage and then you try to answer the questions.
Is that cheating? I thought that's what everybody did.
I don't know if that was cheating, but it was like, okay, if I'm going to read this thing and I'm going to comprehend it and I have to do so many and I have to do it quickly, I might as well know what you're asking me first. Let me read the questions and then I'll go read the
passage.
But see,
the thing you don't understand is because you're very smart is that if you have comprehension issues, even the questions are hard to comprehend. Mm. Like, you think that, yes, that's a great way to go about it, but your brain is still really good at comprehension. So you could not just comprehend what the questions were, but easily link them to the text. And when you have comprehension issues, that's not easily done, no matter what order you do them in. So.
I mean, if I was running out of time on the thing, because it was always like, there was so many that you had to do in a period of time.
Right.
And if you run out, like, you know, whatever. But I would read the questions and I would scan the paragraph looking for, like, keywords, right? Like, if it said, like, you know, what did Julia do at school? I'd look for the word Julia, and then that explains my reading level.
It not explains your reading level, but it explains sometimes when I'll be like, oh, yeah, I read that book, and then we try and talk about the book, and you're like, yeah, I don't remember that part. You'll be like, you clearly didn't actually read the book.
I did read it.
You read it, but you didn't read. Like, me, you know me, like, I'm a voracious reader, and I like to, like, I love prose, and I love, you know, the actual act of reading.
Well,
so.
It depends. If I'm reading, like Walter Mosley, I'm reading something.
Sure,
like the prose, I'll really, you know, digest it, enjoy it, or something that's got historical.
In school, I was like that, though. Really like that.
With articles and stuff, I scan read. I kind of bullet point read.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I read terribly slow. I'd be here all day. So that was Faith. Mm-hmm. And you tell me about Zoe? What?
Zoe, yeah. Zoe was great. She's finishing grade school. So she's graduating, going to junior high. So they're in the process of picking a junior high school for her, which in normal places is not a big deal. But in New York City, it's a huge deal because you have certain schools you have to test into and you have to qualify for and you have to be recommended for. So they're kind of in the process of deciding what kind of school to send her to.
And you say, like, what kind of, like art versus drama.
Right.
Versus...
Like, not drama necessarily, but, you know, there's going to be a scientific, you know, thing to
and
it.
What are her and mom thinking?
These magnet schools. I'm really pushing for her to go to an art school because I really am just incredibly impressed with her artistic ability. And, you know, she came in second in that art contest last year with the self-portrait that she did. I mean, she was like a hair away from having her painting shown in MoMA. It would be there right now. So she's really good. And beyond, this is what I was telling my sister, which was that it's not just that she's good. Lots of kids are good at drawing, but her vision, the way she like interprets things artistically, she's not mimicking anything.
What was the one you showed me? It was I swear it was like a pencil, black and white, and she was like shading and grays and negative space for a 10-year-old.
You should see. Some of the stuff looks like M.C. Escher that she does. Some of the stuff looks very Picasso-ish, and it's just the way she sees it and how she decides to draw it. And it's so varied. Sometimes she uses a ton of color. Sometimes she's very muted. She has a whole portfolio she started putting together.
Wow.
It's really impressive, and this is just with the limited, you know, instruction and supplies that she has. And so I really want her to go someplace that she'll be able to learn a lot of different disciplines. I mean, who knows? She might be some, you know, world-class sculptor for all we know. I have no
clay,
idea.
Working,
who knows?
Yeah, other mediums.
Maybe oil is her real, you know, thing. So I'm hoping that, I mean, I think there's a couple of different options. And so there's a lot to consider, obviously, logistically with that, because now they're going to have them going to two different schools. So there's that to contend with and how far apart they are and getting them to and from. And
the school that Faith is at is not one they're considering.
No.
Okay.
No. Yeah, no.
Okay.
No.
So that was Faith and Zoe, and then you also had Ciara and Zizi, correct?
Yeah, Ciara was there, which is just great. She's a week from turning 15.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah.
Honestly, I remember pushing her in a stroller.
I know.
I remember her at like 2.
I know.
And she's turning 15.
15. It's crazy.
Nuts.
So she's going, you know, she's in sophomore year. Next year's junior year, big year for her. And so we actually, she needed some help with some homework. She's reading Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe, and she has been having some trouble connecting to it. She's like, I just don't get what the point of all of this is. So we had a really great, I would say we spent about an hour and a half just talking about the book and some of the concepts in it. I've read it several times, so it was it was good for that. I didn't have to look up too much.
I just, you're having a philosophical discussion with our niece Ciara about Things Fall Apart. That blows my mind.
Tell me about it. It's pretty crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then Zizi.
Who, you know, I'm sorry. I don't often enough tell Ciara how much I love her. I think sometimes just because, you know, Karen's not always at all the functions and doesn't come to all the holidays. We don't always get to see Ciara.
Yeah.
I just love having her here at the barbecue. She brought her friend. I just, she's really turned into, I can see the person she is. And I had to take more time to tell her I care about her.
She's great, and she's just getting to be so mature and really, like, thinking about her choices and what she wants out of her life. You
know,
she had to write this goals essay for school, and she showed it to me. I think she had gotten like a B+ on it or something.
Okay.
She's doing really well. She's made honor roll the last three quarters or semesters or whatever.
Am I crazy, or did she skip the like pissy teenager stage? Like, maybe we're not around her enough, but she never was really like our other nieces on Andrea's side. Like, all of them at like 13, 14, like, ugh. OMG, Uncle Drew, leave me alone. Like,
no,
they were really.
You know, I think because her and Karen are really close.
Mm.
And I think that negates a lot of that when you're close to your mom, because usually it's a rebellion thing that makes you act like that. And they get along really well. Like, Karen's very, like, matter of fact type of parenting with Ciara. Like, she's very, like, I'm going to tell you how it is. This is the truth. You know what I mean? She's just a very. So I feel like it doesn't. There's not very far. There's no reason for any rebellion in that relationship.
Even a rebellion. I remember all three, Allison, Victoria, Tyler, there was a stage where you didn't see, hear, or talk to them. When they came over, they had headphones on. They were like sullen. They were teenagers.
Yeah.
And I haven't felt that from Ciara at all, which is
I don't know. Yeah, she definitely is not like that at all. She still loves hanging out with her younger nieces and all of that.
That's
so
great.
It's great. And her thing, she's like, she wants to be the first of her siblings to go to college. And she was talking about the different colleges she's been thinking about and why. And that she was talking about maybe going to community college for a couple of years and then going to university. And so it's just great, you know, knowing that she's thinking about these things and talking to me about them. And so it was great, you know, just to get to spend one-on-one time with all of them. So it was really nice. I actually braided Zoe's hair, so I got to spend a ton of time with her during that and talking to her. She's wearing glasses now. She looks like 15 years old. So
Zoe's wearing glasses now.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
I haven't even, has it been that long since the barbecue? Since August she got glasses?
Yeah, the school year, you know, they go before school, they do their checkups, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah.
I did the same thing. I couldn't read the chalkboard. And they're like, you need glasses.
Yeah. And then there's Miss Zizi, who's going to be four in December.
Sorry to interrupt, but y'all, this little child is like not just gorgeous, but like so precocious.
Oh, my God.
Her parents, our nephew Christopher, so she's our great niece.
Yeah.
And her mom Crystal are just two of the, you know, they're both very attractive people, but she is just adorable is not the right word, right?
Yeah. It's beyond
crazy.
No, because the adorableness is like, she looks really adorable, but it's the thing she says where you're like, did you just say that? We were sitting at the table and she said something and I said, Zizi, you're so smart. And she goes, oh, Auntie Leslie, I'm just very mature. I said, did this 3-year-old just tell me she's mature? Then she says that. Then she sneezed at one point and people said, God bless you. I didn't say God bless you. And she stopped everything. Auntie Leslie, everybody in the room has to say God bless you to me when I sneeze.
You know what that is.
Worry about yourself.
Zizi, worry about yourself.
She's so funny. So she had all these little things and she's just super loving and just, you know, will run up to you and say, oh, I love you so much. You just it, just that. And then yeah. just run away. That's it. That's all she had to tell you right then. So it was really good to, you know, get to hang out with her and see her. And Crystal was so sweet. She did her hair like my hair. So we had matching hair when she came over. And I surprised her. She didn't know I was coming. And Crystal didn't tell her. So it was nice.
And when she said match it, meaning not the color.
No, not the color. But she had it. No, but she had it all out like I wear mine and curly. So she's like, we both have puffy hair, Auntie. She was excited about that. So it was good.
I'm jealous. I love those kids so much.
Yeah, it was great.
Fantastic. And I think I saw a bunch of, like, did your mom cook soup, peas, and rice?
Oh, yeah, my mom.
Really? You didn't bring any home?
There was none to bring home.
You know how much I love stew peas and rice.
There was none to bring home. My mom came Saturday. She cooked stew peas and rice on Saturday along with some fish, and it was demolished. In fact, when I finished doing Zoe's hair, me and Zoe were like, I'm hungry again. We'd already eaten. We went back in, and she and I finished the last of the stew peas and rice. It was gone. And then she also cooked dinner yesterday. She made roast chicken. She made roast beef. She made rice and peas. She made plantain. I mean, you know, just typical Sunday Jamaican dinner. It was awesome.
Y'all, my mother-in-law, Valerie, Leslie's mom, she can put her foot in a dish. I mean, she cooks so good.
I swear I gained like 6 pounds. It's so good.
And her stew peas and rice is just, it's awesome.
She made
it's
her
so
banana
good.
Cake. She made everything. It was
dang,
so good.
You got,
so
good. I'm jealous.
Good, good, goodness.
She laid it out. It's fantastic. She did she stay over the night or not?
She stayed over Saturday night.
I bet she cooked fucking breakfast too.
Oh yeah, she did make breakfast.
You guys stink. I don't mean you stink.
She
I'm
didn't
just
make
jealous.
Johnny cakes though, just so you know.
All right. I
she was mad
better.
Too. She didn't think Denise had cornstarch. She goes, oh, after I made breakfast, I saw she had cornstarch. I would have made the Johnny cakes with the corned beef, but she didn't get it. I said, Drew would have been really mad then.
Well, you were in Brooklyn too. Did you get, did you go to Flatbush and get patties and cocoa bread?
I had a patty. That's when Charlize came. I took her with me to go get patties. So I got patty, cocoa bread, had cola champagne, had a cream soda. It was lovely. And ZZ was talking to everybody in the store, pointing out the different flag. That's my Jamaican flag. That's my Trini flag. And she told me everything she wanted, you know, a carrot cake and this, that, the other, and what patty she wanted.
Maybe we could open a patty store in Philadelphia. I just love a...
Not too sure.
Like a juicy beef or a crusty patty?
Juicy beef's the best one, but we went to Golden Crest, but it was still really good.
Dang. And did you get what's the champagne?
Is that the cola champagne.
And why don't they make that here? Why don't we find cola champagne?
I'm sure you might be able to find, but I don't know if you'll find D&G. I just feel like it's limited distribution, like only to places where there's a lot of Jamaican people, basically.
For our non-West Indian folks, tell them how would you describe cola champagne as a flavor? It's kind of orange, but not?
It's like fruit punchy, but not. It's like fizzy fruit punch, I guess. I don't know.
But it's
I
orange.
Really don't know. It the color of it's orange, but it's not orange soda. It doesn't taste anything like orange soda. That's why I said it's like fruity. I really I don't know what else. I couldn't describe it to anything else. It doesn't taste like anything else.
Well, D&G does the cream.
They do cream, grape,
even the
pineapple.
Cream soda is not like the cream soda you can buy here.
Yeah,
it's
like white.
Yeah.
Versus like the dark color like amber color of the American one.
And I did say it's orange, but they have an orange drink and they have a grape drink as well.
And pineapple. You like the pineapple one?
I do. Yeah. I love D&D.
Which is funny because you don't like pineapples. But
I do hate pineapples, but I love pineapple soda. It's strange.
It's weird.
And in fact, over my weekend, one of the things I had was a pineapple curry dish that was really good.
Ooh.
I loved it.
Yum.
Yeah.
That sounds really good.
So what else? So you're talking about mom's cooking and everything went out, game night. What else did you guys do?
Oh, well, I did go to a club with my sisters and my friend Candace, who I've known for, probably like 30 years.
It's like Candace.
Yeah, 25, 30 years. We were friends in junior high school, so we've known each other a really long time. And so we were originally going to this one place called Island Grill, which is by my sister's house, by Karen's house. We tried to go there, and they were trying to charge $20 to get into this place.
Like just to get into the club?
Yeah. It's not a club. It's just a bar and a restaurant. And on Friday and Saturdays, they have a DJ and a dance floor. And people come and they, you know, hang out. You get your food in the back. You have some beers. You chill out and you dance.
Okay. But it's an actual establishment. It's not like
it is. It's a full-time establishment. But I guess it was the owner's birthday. So he was trying to charge $20 to get people in. And Karen was like, forget that. Come over here to my house and... I guess I just won't drink and I'll drive and we'll go somewhere else.
Okay.
But when we got to her house, Rose, this is my sister's fiance, said, I didn't know Leslie was here. Okay, I'll be the designated driver and I'll drive all you guys over to the party. So
I really like Rose.
I know, me too.
The last time he was here was really fun.
Yeah, so he chauffeured us, all four of us.
Nice.
Denise, Karen, me, and Candace to this place called Rhapsody, also in Brooklyn. And it was really fun. We literally got totally wasted, shots, drinks, and then we just danced to reggae and dance hall and soca music all night. Nary an American person or song in the place, and it was lovely and wonderful and awesome, and we just had a great time till like 4:30 in the morning.
I had my phone on airplane mode so I could not be disturbed. When I got up in the morning, I was like, what is she freaking texting me at like 1:35? We're at the club now. Like, it was like a quarter to two. You're like, we're here now. I thought, dude,
we didn't even go out till like midnight. Oh my God, I was so hungover in the morning.
And we were out for Lady J's birthday on Tuesday until like 3 or 4 in the morning.
But at least I didn't drink then. I was just tired. This was bad.
Yeah, but I love you, but you may be like, there's like an algorithm, like take your age, divide it by something, times how many shots, is the number of times you can go out till 4 a.m. in a month. And for you, it's like 0.5. You did it 2 times in like 3 days or 4 days.
It was terrible. It was too much. It was just the worst. And then Roz's birthday party was Sunday night at like 5 o'clock. They just had like Greek food and drinks at her place. I didn't drink there. Except everybody there was hungover. The whole party.
From the night before?
Yes. Not that they were with me. We all were separate. Alice was at a movie premiere. Roz and Andrew were at a engagement party. I was out with my sisters, but we all were looking at each other like, whoa, a little green in the gills. But it was fun.
And how was Roz's birthday?
Great. The boys were so cute and saying happy birthday.
It sounds like you guys had a really good time.
I had a great weekend.
I'm pleased.
Yes.
That makes me happy. Me alegra.
And what were you doing while I was gallivanting, eating, drinking my way around Brooklyn?
Well, so you left because I had that workshop all weekend long.
Yep.
Landmark Forum. And I got to tell you, I loved it. I thought it was very, maybe I overshare here on the podcast, but I've been in therapy. I've, been on antidepressants.
Who hasn't been in therapy?
Good.
Most people say everybody should be in therapy.
Well, and I'll say this of years of whatever, and maybe the purpose of therapy is to keep you coming back to therapy. So they didn't really break it down like Landmark Forum does, but for a weekend, and it was a long weekend. It was like 9 a.m. to 10:30 every day, like 3 days. And it was only like $500, but I'd say best $500 I ever spent. I would definitely recommend, for folks to check it out. Or if you know people that have been to it, ask them about it and see kind of how they felt. But I think it's, for me, I think I'm very different in the way I think of things and look at things from a workshop on how to live, how to be a human being. And that sounds crazy. It kind of does. But I think no one really, like, you go to school and you learn all sorts of stuff. Nobody teaches you and really breaks down sort of, how to be a human being and how to have, better relationships and how to be and act. And it's not like, rules, like you should do this, you do that. It was really the conditioning and socialization that you've had and the little voice in your head and sort of why, the process that we typically go through, they're like, once I have this, then I'll be happy. And once I do this, then I'll do that. And then I'll be happy. It's sort of inaccurate, but it is a little bit, you've only got 3 days and you're trying to have a breakthrough with people. But I thought it was fantastic. I really, I value it greatly.
I'm definitely glad that you had it. That was a little like, you said a few things already that's like definitely landmark speak. You made a few phrases. That speech you just gave was total landmark speak.
Which one?
I only actually have one question for you. Did they make you sell any jams and jellies?
No jams and jellies.
Oh, so then it's good.
No Kool-Aid.
Then you're fine.
No Kool-Aid.
You got the jams and jellies reference, though.
I do.
Okay.
Jams and jellies. Was that...
it's King of the Hill.
Well, and there's also Knott's Berry Farm. I don't know if you were in Chicago.
Knott's Berry Farm.
Yeah, so the Knott's Berry Farm
I know what Knott's Berry Farm is, but they're a cult, too.
No, they're a cult, but they sell jams and jellies.
No, but on King of the Hill, that's what the cult, the Leanne... joins
to sell jams and jellies.
She brings them to this farm and they make jams and jellies, and like that's what they're making her money.
I gotcha.
That's like their whole like premise. They make them eat rice and no protein, and then they sell jams and jellies.
No jams and jellies, but I'll be cleaning carpets next weekend.
All right, Costanza.
Yeah. Well, and you know, we talk about like the culty stuff. So I guess there was a predecessor to this workshop, and the predecessor of the workshop, like, you weren't allowed to go to the bathroom. Like, there was some weird shit that they no longer, I guess, do. Like, I used the bathroom. I was allowed to pee. That was an option.
You could pee. Okay,
I was able to pee. Yeah.
And actually, they were able to get you out because we had an emergency, so that was good too.
Yeah,
the
police showing up at our house.
Yeah, the alarm here at the house, at the homestead.
That's my fault. I didn't tell our pet sitter. How to work the alarm. Working my bad.
That's all right. Well, I'm glad. It sounds like we both had, though completely, could not be more different, but equally rewarding weekends. So that was great.
Yeah, very, very different, but valuable nonetheless.
All right, well, let's jump into some of this. I guess you can call it news.
News. Yeah. I give a little ding. Shout out to Carl. Keep sending us this good stuff. But he sent me an article about, I'll just read the topic. White people think black people are magical.
Oh, we are magical.
Well, you have that shirt that says black women are magical.
No, I said, but yeah, black girls are magical.
Black girls are magical. You're magical. Oh. But so social scientists have known for a while that racism isn't just about explicit hatred or animosity. Often prejudice is the result of split-second gut-level decision-making rather than the acts of bad people with malicious intentions. A recent study in social psychology and personality cast an interesting new light on this. White people apparently have superhumanization bias when it comes to black people. That is, they associate them with superhuman abilities. In a series of five studies, some involving so-called implicit association tests in which words are flashed on a screen quickly to prime a subject for the meaning but not for them to consciously understand what they've seen, the researchers showed that whites are quicker to associate blacks than whites with superhuman words like ghost, paranormal, or spirit, and more likely to think a black person as opposed to a white person has certain superhuman abilities, and that the more they think blacks are superhuman, the less they view black people as having a capacity to feel pain. And I don't want to say that boggles my mind. Like, I guess I get it. It makes a bit of sense. But it's, on the one hand, an odd dichotomy, right, that we white people generally think of people of color as lesser, right? We tend to think of us as superior. Yet, on the other spectrum, we tend to think of or have an implicit bias that people of color have these superhuman abilities, which makes sense. That's the whole narrative and trope of like, you know, Michael, smoked marijuana and he, you know, attacked Officer Wilson, and after being shot multiple times, he charged him. Like, in order to believe that, like, you need to think of like, he's like some like super Negro, right? Like, you need to think like something really like special about him to be able to do these things. You know what I'm saying?
Well, what I take from it though, is that we're just not human.
And that absolutely,
it's beyond whatever you're applying to it. The fact remains that we're not like them, and we're not human, and we're different. And whatever the things that they're going to apply to black people, it's going to be not something that they would apply to themselves. And that's what creates this perpetuation of the other, the other, the other. And it goes into a lot of this implicit bias. What else was in there?
Well, so they said that more research is needed, that they're not drawing a lot of conclusions based on this, but they did say that it runs sort of contrary to what we normally think of as racism and, you know, familiar forms of dehumanizing. We're now superhumanizing. But they did say that it might indicate why traditionally black people are undertreated for pain, for example, and why black juveniles are considered more adult than white juveniles when we're talking about culpability, right? That might be a conclusion, that this bias has led to undertreating of pain in hospitals. And, Michael's an adult at 18, and, you know, teenagers are at King Pumpkin Fest, same age. One group gets called, you know, kids. The other is called an adult, even posthumously. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. And it's funny because that leads directly into this study that just came out confirming the dehumanization of black children and the preschool to prison pipeline, which I know, you know, I've been shouting from the rafters about for a number of years now, because it's such a big piece of the puzzle that leads to mass incarceration. Nation, which, of course, is the fact that African Americans make up only 13% of all Americans, but half of prison inmates in the United States are black. So
Say that again. Just let's hammer that in, please.
Yes. Black people constitute 13% of all Americans. However, half of all prison inmates in the United States are African American.
And I think I said this on the other podcast, that people of color, are, especially in particular black men, are the single most incarcerated group or demographic on the planet.
Mm-hmm. So obviously this has been something that people are talking about a lot now and has led to situations like Ferguson, because really you have to think of it all as a larger picture. It's not isolated to just one thing. And I was talking about this with somebody the other day with the situation with, obviously everyone's kind of waiting on eggshells right now for this grand jury in the Darren Wilson case in Ferguson to come about. And it's like the reason why the eggshells are there is because the non-indictment is not about Darren Wilson per se, but it's about the system that would come to the conclusion that it was okay for him to do what he did.
Yeah.
And it's like people want to make it about, oh, we're after one person or somebody's after a single individual. And it's not about that.
And I honestly, white people that are listening, any of my friends that are listening, just fucking stop with the like, because you're right. They really think that this is about Darren Wilson and trying to, you know, in some way impinge Darren Wilson's due process. And it's like, no, this is not about just Michael Brown. This is not about Darren Wilson. You know, this is much bigger than that. And if you aren't getting that this is much bigger than that, you just, where have you been? You haven't been paying attention in my book, you know?
Absolutely.
And I see it from just friends, people on Facebook that I kind of care about that are like, you know, why are you so, you know, why do you care so much about this one case? It's like, oh shit, get off of it. It's not this one case. If that's what you think, you're not paying
attention.
You're
like missing the entire point of it. So obviously, social and racial justice activists have been arguing about the situation, the school to prison pipeline, which funnels young black kids into the criminal justice system with much higher rates of school suspension and arrest compared to non-black kids for the exact same infractions.
Yep.
This has been going on for 20 years.
Decades.
Was the first study that came out of Smith College. She did a 3-year study. Bad Boys, Public Schools in the Making of Black Masculinity is the name of the study that she did. So this is 20 years we've been dealing with this, and that's what led to that disparity that I mentioned earlier in incarceration rates, one of the factors that led to it. And today the trend continues with record numbers of suspensions as a result of all of these zero tolerance school policies that they put in place, and the increasing presence of campus police who now arrest students for insubordination or fights rather than acting up as they would in a white school.
If I'm not mistaken, increasingly these truancy kind of, you know, like security people are actually cops. Like they get cops that used to be cops or they're off duty and now they're in schools. And so they're taking that same bias, the same,
So they have disproportionate expulsion rates and arrest rates in the school. And then once they're in the juvenile justice system, forget about it. The likelihood of them being incarcerated as an adult just skyrockets. It almost becomes impossible for them not to become incarcerated. And so there's been the Justice Department under President Obama has stated this is a problem. They've been working on some new guidelines. But a new study just came out that turns out the negative disciplinary actions affect African-American children starting as early as age 3.
Wow.
3.
How at 3? I don't doubt it, but what socialization, what's happening at 3 to 5? I mean, God damn it, white people, at 3?
At 3. This is from the U.S. Department of Education. They just released a comprehensive study of public schools, revealing in a report that black children face discrimination even in preschool.
God.
And that preschool-age children are suspended at all is hugely, hugely disturbing.
How does that happen? How do you suspend a 3-year-old?
But data from the 2011-2012 year show that although black children make up only 18% of preschoolers, 42% of them are suspended at least once, and 48% suspended multiple times.
You know what that sounds like? That sounds exactly like the fucking incarceration stats.
It does.
They almost are in lockstep, right?
They are. That's why it's called the preschool to prison pipeline.
Fuck.
It's really crazy. A 3-year-old?
I just...
Here's the key findings in the report. Again, this is from the United States Department of Justice. This is not from some sort of think tank or, you
know. Right, this isn't biased.
No, this is just, they looked at the data and this is the report that they've come up with. One, access to preschool. About 40% of public school districts do not offer preschool, and where it is available, it's mostly part day only. One of the school districts that operate public preschool programs, barely half are available to all students within the district, which is critical. Mm. I went to pre-kindergarten. It was enormous. It's huge first step to getting your education. It's insane. Okay, so then the suspension of preschool children. Black students represent, as I said, 18% of preschool enrollment, but 42% of students once suspended once and 48 of the students suspended more than once. Access to advanced courses. 81% of Asian American high school students and 71% of white high school students attend high schools where the full range of math science courses are offered. That is Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2, Calculus, Biology, Chemistry, Physics.
And that's not even the advanced placement stuff. That's just the regular.
Regular ass shit. However, less than half of American Indian and Native Alaskan high school students have the same access to the full range of math and science courses. 57% of black students, 67% Latino students, 63% of students with disabilities, and 65% with English language learning student learners have access to that full range. So we went from 81% Asian, 71% white, down to 57% black, 67% Latino.
Man, it's almost depressing. And you know, it reminds me of the, not reminds me, but did you ever read the Malcolm Gladwell's, the book about 10,000 hours and the.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the.
Outliers, right?
Outliers, yeah. So the bit about hockey players, right? Yeah. And so the difference being that, and I forget exactly how he said it, but something like 70 or 80% of professional hockey players were born in the month of January and February. And it's like, why is this Why is that? How is that possible? So if you're born in January and you start playing peewee hockey, you're, you know, 5 plus 8 months. If you're born in September, you're 5 plus a couple of months.
Right.
You don't think that's a big difference, but the 6-7 months in maturity at the age of 5 is significant. You're, you know, 10% older than everybody else because you've got those extra months. You're 10% more coordinated. And guess what? You get more coaching. You get identified. You get put into those advanced hockey programs. Compound that by the time you're 18, 19, 20, virtually, you know, an overwhelming number of professional hockey players were born in these months that are earlier in the year. It's just because of your pure luck to have been born in that month, you have an advantage. This seems very similar that, you know, based on your color, mm-hmm. based on your skin, you're given this advantage from apparently 3 years old, and it compounds itself over years and years and years and years. And for white people, you end up in college, and for people of color, you end up criminalized. You end up in jail. You end up incarcerated.
Yeah, I mean, it's really terrible. It actually also harkens back to what you were talking about, how they don't think that white people don't think black people can feel pain at the same way. And this is shown in how they view black children. And this was a group that was studied by UCLA professor Philip Goff and collaborators, white people overestimated the ages of black children compared to non-black ones, implying that black children were seen as, quote, significantly less innocent than others. The authors wrote, quote, "We expected that individuals would perceive black boys as being more responsible for their actions and as being more appropriate targets for police violence. We find support for these hypotheses and converging evidence that black boys are seen as older and less innocent and that they prompt a less essential conception of childhood than do their white same age peers."
Sure. And that's why you get the, like, you know, 11, 12-year-old black boys are now thinking as, you know, the threat, people locking their doors. The article I was talking about before said the same thing, that, you know, not only with the pain, but that they're thought of in the, you know, juvenile context as being more culpable. They're able to be guilty for their crimes because they're thought of as more mature.
Absolutely. The author of this article asked this person to comment on the Jeff study showing police estimates of black children as older than they are. And Yates agreed that it appears as though the same objective data are being interpreted differently as a function of race. She noted this trend, calling it adultification of black boys. Mm. She recounted an example from Ferguson's work. This is the person, Ferguson, not the place, in which, quote, when a white student fails to return their library book, they're seen as forgetful. When a black student fails to return a library book, the terms thief or looter were used.
Golly. You know, and that's a segue into another article I want to talk about, the mm-hmm. things you can learn from an interracial relationship.
Yeah.
But on my reading list, I haven't got to it. I don't know if you've read it, but a book called The Condemnation of Blackness. Mm. Have you read it all?
I haven't read it yet, but I know that Ta-Nehisi Coates recommended it to us, so I do want to read
it. Yeah, Khalil Muhammad. It's on Amazon, but it's basically talking about the idea of black criminality and just how far back it goes, you know, all the way to the, you know, 1800s, right? The 19th century, this sort of thought of African Americans and blacks as being, you know, more prone to criminality and more scary, if you will. Mm. It's a trope, but it's old and it's deep. And these studies, I think, that you're talking about and we're seeing are just evidence of it. And mm-hmm. it's, and, you know, those are the things sometimes when we're talking about the social change that we're hoping our world can go through. It's, I don't want to say like how, but it just seems daunting at sometimes when it's just this level of bias that white people have with regards to people of color. It's just, it's so pervasive. It taints everything.
It does. And it's so dangerous to have this post-racial idea in the atmosphere, because then what happens is the things that were put in place, like affirmative action, like voter registration laws and things like that, were the reasons why they were put there was because it was clear that this inherent bias was present and that these things were needed to actively combat them and to negate them until such a point that we could make them go away. And the point of it was, if we have these things in place, like affirmative action as a great example, and so now we have more black people that are going to college, more black people that are going into the professional arena, that's where you start to see these ideas change. It's like, oh, we have a black Supreme Court justice, we have a black president, but then when you just completely forget that this stuff is still there, you kind of are negating the point that it was ever done in the first place.
Yeah, it's almost like a macro version of dog whistle politics.
Yeah.
Right? On the one hand, like, oh, it's not about race. You know, we have a black president.
Race. But then it's like race.
Right. And then like, wait a minute, did you talk about race? You motherfucking play the race card, you reverse racist. You know, it's like, God damn it. It's a little bit crazy. So the other study I was going to talk about was the study that reveals what anyone of any race can learn from an interracial relationship mm-hmm. like ours.
Okay.
And I'll just, in short, the summation is... worry about yourself. So the new, according to a study published this week in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, people understand each other better when one person stops worrying about how they're being perceived by the other. Mm. The study, which examined the dynamic of 58 mixed-race roommate pairs, revealed that in both white-black and white-Asian pairs, the racial minorities accurately perceived whether their white partners felt understood by them, while the white partner, however, did not accurately perceive whether the cross-race partners felt understood. The white people are overly concerned with how their cross-race partners view them. The desire to affiliate, is what they'd called it, can lead them to pay extra attention to the person and treat them more sensitively. And I thought that was kind of interesting, but when one desire to affiliate stems from a rather selfish goal, it can lead to negative consequences. So there's this desire to, you know, oh, I want to make sure I've got a black roommate now, or, you know, I've got an Asian roommate. I want to be aware and make sure I'm not being insensitive. But that overt focus on it can lead to you being insensitive.
Right.
You know, so they don't have examples in the study, but I was thinking sort of my church, since you've left, is overly white, like really, really white, like not a black person in there. And I know that as soon as a person of color walks in, it's like, oh, thank God. I'm so pleased that you can be at our church. We're so diverse now. Here, why don't you be on the committee of diversity? And like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can get really... you can go overboard with it.
Right. Yeah.
I thought it was interesting.
And so what does the interracial couple teach?
Oh, well, so they didn't talk about couples, but this is relationships.
I see.
And they focus on roommates specifically. But,
got it.
So, but whites tend to experience higher affiliation motivation in these interracial interactions, desiring to be liked by the minority a greater extent than the other individual in this relationship. But they conclude that the desire to affiliate with a racial minority ironically leads them to inaccurately perceive minorities, potentially causing racial minorities to feel misunderstood and thwarting any positive interracial interactions and roommate relationships.
Which is very interesting because we even have that discussion about how white people have trouble discerning emotion from facial expressions of other races. So I like those two things together just create such confusion, I would imagine.
Yeah.
On both sides.
Totally. So their conclusion is to be successful in an interracial relationship, roommate, romantic, or otherwise, just you'll be better off when you stop fixating on how we're being perceived. White people, just, you know. Worry about yourself, as we said at the beginning. And I thought, you know, maybe just our relationship, when you and I have talked about, and we've gotten deep on race, and, you know, there's obviously things we've had to talk about. But I remember in the beginning, I almost, and I don't say this like inappropriately, but like, I'd kind of forget that you were black. Like, I'd almost like, it would like something would happen, I'd be like, oh, shit, right, my wife's black. And not in like a bad way or a good way, just, I don't know, like, you're just Leslie, you're just my wife. I never really, I didn't always. And maybe it's because I am white and I didn't have to consider it, but I didn't always consider your blackness in every instance. And I wonder if that was maybe the right thing to do. Like, on some level, I did it, you know, like accidentally, but, you know, maybe because of my privilege. But on another level, not fixating and worrying about it allowed you and I to have, I hope, a pretty good relationship when it comes to those things. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. I mean, I wouldn't say that. I definitely always remembered you were white, so.
You always remember I'm white?
For sure.
I'm very white. It's hard to forget. I'm like albino, like gleamingly white.
No, I don't think your skin's gleaming.
I know, I'm making a joke.
But, yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. I'll have to think about that one. Maybe we can pick that up.
Let me ask you this. So in terms of the context of this sort of study, it was only 58 roommate pairs, so it's not exactly an apples-to-apples comparison. Mm-hmm. But did you feel that, one, I either over or under worried about affiliating and being concerned with how I was perceived by you in the being the minority in the relationship?
No, I don't think you did, but I think that's you.
What do you mean?
Like, that's just your personalities like that. Like, you, I feel like you worked through a lot of, like, worrying about what other people think about you. And so that was
before we ever got together.
Yes. Okay. And so I feel like that's a big, like, personality trait of yours. So I don't think that you ever would go into a relationship thinking about that.
That's a good point.
So I think that's very specific to you. I don't think you would have thought in those terms because that's not just the way you approach relationships, generally speaking.
Well, you remember the phrase I used to say back in like 10 years ago, even 15 years ago?
What?
I'm like black olives. There's no middle ground. You either love me or hate me.
Yes.
I don't really give a shit.
You would introduce yourself and say that.
Yeah.
Like, you might hate me, but you might love me. Like, that was your whole thing.
And I didn't care.
Right.
I just was me, yeah.
So I feel like that was, to me, that was more of, I would say that probably contributed more to that piece of our relationship of you not needing to overcompensate. But I will say I've had plenty of other white roommates. And I'm trying to think if I've had any instances of this. I don't think so, because the people that I was roommates with, we were
close. Well, you're high school, though.
No, even after. I mean, I lived with Ellie after high school.
Yeah, but she went to your high school. And I think that would.
Oh, yeah.
Going to your high school would have, you know, that's not the typical.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, I guess that's true.
And what about now? Do you think that I likewise don't have a over or under concern about your perception of me, my perception of you?
No, I don't think so. But I think you're just like really hard on white people, though.
I am aggressively anti-racist.
That's not the same as what I'm talking about.
What do you mean hard on white people?
Like, I feel like you just have like no tolerance for anybody like making a mistake, or not even making a mistake, but you're like, you're just very just like, nope. That's the racist, and you're wrong. And like,
that's because we're the worst. We're fucking terrible.
I know, but my whole thing is like you have to have. We've had this argument before about conservatives and liberals, where I'm like, you can't just assume that the other side's evil and out to get you all the time. Because if they're assuming the same about you, like, you're never going to be able to get anywhere. Like, you have to be able to respect people's perspectives. Obviously, sometimes their perspectives are pieces of shit and it's bullshit. But sometimes you also have to be like, well, what would make them come to this conclusion, and why do they think that way? Because I don't believe that everybody's inherently evil. I don't believe that. I think that people bring their own personal history and inherent bias to their lives. And some people are able to separate that and come to a different conclusion. And some people really aren't.
Well, and when it comes to like what you're talking about with white people making mistakes and stepping in it when it comes to racial insensitivity, here's the thing. And I've said this like numerous times, and I really believe this. You just, it's the issue when it gets pointed out to you as a white person, when you get defensive, you say, oh, I didn't think like that. Just, you got to fucking own it. Be acknowledgement and accountability, right? Ooh, you're right. I did that. I'm so sorry. I won't do it again. That's fucking it.
Right.
But if white people were to do that and that alone, I'd give a lot more white people a lot more of a pass. I just, nobody does.
Yeah, but think of how foreign that is. That's something that's not even something that in our work lives, in our school lives, in any part of our life is what you're taught to do. I had this conversation with Jessica on the No Bitch Left Behind podcast, and I was saying that I feel like there's been a loss of teaching empathy to our children, and that it's something that needs to be actively instilled in your children. And what happens is when you don't make that a priority in their personal development versus worrying about what school they go to or what team they get on or what they're wearing or what clique they're with, you lose instilling in them the ability to interact with people on a real level, because now it's all about them and that's all you've taught them.
And maybe, so I don't know if this is the same or if it's a out, you know, like this, because of that aspect leads to this, but in like celebrity and other things that are happening now, what happens when somebody does something? They don't take accountability. They go to fucking rehab.
Right.
Or the used to be, well, I'll deny it. My Twitter was hacked. And then, okay, it was me. Okay, I'll go to rehab. Now they fucking don't even do that. They just double down on their horribleness. Like Piers Morgan. Nope, I'm going to keep repeating this horrible shit and keep repeating it. Like there's no accountability. No one ever in the public sphere says, you know what? I fucked up. Me, my bad. I got it. I'm sorry.
Which is really interesting because there's been so many instances in our history, pop culture wise. I remember one so huge, which was Hugh Grant. He was caught picking up this transvestite hooker on the street or whatever it was, like red-handed.
Right.
Like there was no getting out of it. And he went on David Letterman. He's like, yeah, man, I totally messed up. I've just been horrible and I never should have done it. It was the worst thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
And I know what's wrong with me and I should have never done it. And it was like his career didn't even take a blip because it was like, oh, all right, this dude owned up to what he did. What else is there to talk about now? Nothing.
Well,
because he already said it.
Maybe it's our fault, right? The consumer's fault for letting PR agents whitewash shit and us to keep, you know, buying their fucking products and be like, oh, it's okay. You know, you didn't take accountability for it, but no big deal. Whatever. You know?
I don't know.
Well, I'll say that. Just if you're listening and you fuck up in any way, in any regard, accountability and acknowledgement. I'm sorry. My fault. I'll do better. That's it.
Yeah.
It's not that hard.
Well, speaking of black and white people, you know, I have a strong desire to be around more black people. It's like one of my new, like, trying to make sure I'm with black people more.
Yeah. And I do feel not, like, responsible, but I feel like I'm like draining your blackness. like I'm like a big white magnet that's like sucking the blackness out of you or something. I don't know.
Oh,
I don't feel guilty, but I'm like, and I'll say this, and in tandem with your desire to be with more people of color, I'm like increasingly fucking frustrated and irritated with white people. So I have no, like at this landmark forum this weekend, it was, you know, like our country, maybe 10, 12% people of color. Every meal, every break, every time I spent with anybody was with a black person. I was just like, you know, and invariably like, yeah, my wife's black, you know, just, I don't know. I don't say I prefer people of color, that maybe.
Or like you hold a door open and they don't even say thank you. Like I'm here to just open the door for them. That drives me fucking crazy.
And I've been rude. Not, I haven't been Cornelling it. I haven't been like standing ovation people of color, but I definitely like go way out of my way. Like I'll almost like close the door on a white chick and be like, oh, here, let me open this door for you, black dude. Here you go. Have a great day. Like I really go out of my way to be extra more special, nice to people of color and almost indifferent to white people.
Right.
Nah, fuck it.
Well, finally, I grew up in Brooklyn, not just in Brooklyn, but in Flatbush, Brooklyn, and it's like super black, lots of different nationalities there, a lot of people from the West Indies, Jamaica, the Bahamas, Trinidad, all over the place, Grenada, you name it.
Yep.
And so that's where I spent my childhood. I grew up there all the way through when I moved to Chicago for college. And So it was great to get to go back, and I was really excited to hang out in my old neighborhood. My sister lives in the apartment that I grew up in. After my mom moved to New Jersey, my sister stayed there. So
Ocean Avenue
was like literally in the same bedroom that I grew up in and everything for the whole weekend, and it was really great, and I had so much fun. So, but my Brooklyn is the Brooklyn from Lighters Up by Lil' Kim.
So cue that?
Let's play that just so people can get an idea. Like, oh, my Brooklyn was is like.
So I'm gonna take you back to the block, yo. Put you on the how we rock, yo. Summer boosting, 12-year-olds prostituting, hit me hired for execution. There's no solution. Niggas still pissing the hallways. Bees get high in them all day. The youth them bang at the cops off the roof. You don't know my town is the truth. Welcome to Brooklyn, BK, not at all. £4, leave your face on the wall. R.I.P. in memory of. Never should die enemies of. We get it on where we live.
You better have a pass when you cross that bridge. Welcome to Brooklyn. So that's my Brooklyn, okay?
White people be crossing that bridge a lot.
Let me tell you something. If you need a pass to cross that bridge, they're selling those passes.
It's a Metro card. That's what you need now.
They are selling those passes at Whole Foods currently.
Fucking Trader Joe's.
Trader Joe's.
IKEA.
Whole Foods.
Container Store.
Pilates Studios.
What's that spinning thing? Soul Cycle. Your Soul Cycle pass. Get over to Brooklyn.
Hot Yoga. They're giving those passes away. What's all that? Up and through.
Whatever that.
Yeah. All of that. So here I am in Flatbush on Ocean Avenue, chilling, just, you know, taking a walk around, going to the patty store, hanging out with my nieces, et cetera, et cetera. Let me give you a few interesting things that I've seen. Now, let me tell you, Drew, you can attest to this, that when we first started dating and we first moved back to the East Coast and we went to visit my family there, you were the only white person for, like, miles.
I remember, this is going back a decade ago, I'd be on Ocean Avenue in the car, and it would be, you know, only white guy, literally, like one of the only white people in the entire block, in the entire neighborhood. Yep. And the last time we were there, I just was dumbfounded by the number of white people.
And it's getting worse and worse. I don't want to make it sound
like you call it worse and worse.
I'm just saying it's really getting worse and worse. It's getting ridiculous. I'm just going to go through a few things that I saw that I've never in my goddamn natural life ever seen in my entire life, much less in Flatbush in Brooklyn.
All right, let's do it.
Hipster girls in short skirts and stockings in 30-degree weather.
We're talking about hipster white girls.
Yes. Okay. There's no hipster black girls. They have a different name for them.
Oh, they do?
FYI.
Was it blurred?
I don't know what they're called, but they're not called hipsters.
Okay.
Bike riders just out riding their bikes.
Not in the park, but on the street.
On the streets.
And like, you're talking like white dudes in like the full racing kit?
Yeah, with their water bottles and the freaking hats on and the whole nine.
Probably on a bike that costs more than most cars that used to be there.
Fucking joggers, man. Joggers?
Joggers.
On Ocean Avenue, running, going out for their night run, getting it in.
I bet you they were wearing like
Lululemon.
Yeah, Lululemon.
Oh, yeah. Earbuds in, just making it happen. Armbands.
Wow.
I came out of the actual apartment building. There was a white dude doing his full stretches right out in front of the building after his run. Just getting it in, stretching it.
Stretch the hammies and the quads.
Getting the hammies out there.
Gonna go for a run.
Moving it out. Getting it done.
That's crazy.
In front of the building? Come on, son.
When did he tell me that someone was having like a picnic on the fire escape?
I'm getting to that. A transgender, a couple, one of whom is transgender, moved in to the building my sister's in. Now, that's great. Transgender is not the problem. This is just not something that you would ever have seen previously.
Sure.
Ever. My sister has informed me that I think there's six apartments on each floor. It's six floors. And that currently all but two floors have at least two apartments with solely white people in them now.
Wow.
The entire 18 years I lived in this building, there was one old white woman that lived in the building. She still lives there today. I'm not joking. 18
Crazy.
Years, one white person. Now every floor except for two have two full apartments of just white people in them.
Nuts.
It's not so. They're building out this decrepit theater into the King's Theater. It's going to be, I'm not joking, a concert venue on Flatbush Avenue between Cortelyou Road and Albemarle.
A concert venue.
A concert venue.
Honestly, when we first were dating 10 years ago, Flatbush was like people selling like white T-shirts out of their stairwell. Literally.
A concert venue. And across the street, a hotel.
And this is like the third or fourth hotel we've heard about recently in Brooklyn. And you just know shit's changed when they're putting hotels in
hotel
Brooklyn.
In Flatbush? Come
crazy.
On.
So gentrification,
it's,
man.
It's insane. But the most, well, okay, second most. So then, yes, my nephew's girlfriend told me that she was looking out the window the other day. They were in the house. And these two white people had a whole pizza picnic lunch on their fire escape. And she was just dumbfounded by this action.
Party.
Like, white people. Y'all are crazy.
Open the Martinelli sparkling apple juice. Let's have a picnic.
But the most ridiculous shit I saw. Most ridiculous.
What is it?
Faith and I taking our walk on Cortelyou Road up to the farmer's market. I see a bunch of big crowd of people standing outside the Duane Reade. Like, what the fuck's going on here? What are these people doing? Standing on Cortelyou Road a block from the train station. I walk up to them. It's a bunch of fucking tourists. They're on a goddamn tour. A guy is talking to them about the historical significance, I guess, of Cortelyou Road in Ditmas Park.
One of these, like, food tours of New York style.
Yes.
Of Brooklyn.
Yes. Not of Brooklyn. There's plenty of amazing things to see in Brooklyn. But Cortelyou Road? Come on. This is getting ridiculous now. I was mad enough when I paid $37 for a steak on Cortelyou Road. I'll be goddamned if someone's going to tell me there's something tour-worthy on it now.
That's crazy.
It's insanity.
Like,
I'm afraid what's going to... I don't know what could happen next. I'm really, like, dumbfounded and baffled. I've seen this happen to other neighborhoods. Trust me, it happened in Bed-Stuy. It happened in Park Slope. It's happened plenty of places. But for it to happen to my old neighborhood, I never thought I'd see the day. And yeah. I want to know where all the black people are going.
Well, didn't we talk about this? Was it Jersey City?
Hoboken? Allegedly. Yeah. Allegedly. I don't even know.
Across the river. Well, and when we were there, I don't know, was it last time I was there? Maybe it was 2 times ago. Sometime in the last year, we're walking up Ocean Avenue. And chained, like you'd lock up a bicycle, to the front of a fucking building is a pair of, like, double joggers. Like, the thing that, like, you'd put your kids in and go running with. And I just was like, what? A fucking, like, double push jogger in Brooklyn locked up like a bicycle? It's really changing.
It's
fast.
Nuts. It's crazy.
Fast.
It's
really
crazy.
Fast.
I don't know. I you know, they film a lot of TV shows in that neighborhood. I actually posted a bunch of pictures, and I'll include some of them on the show notes because the architecture in the neighborhood is beautiful. There are a lot of old buildings. And so they film that Boardwalk Empire show there a
yep.
whole lot because they need buildings that look like they would have been around during that time. And so a lot of things are filming around there because a lot of the new – they're not really doing new construction. They're doing rehabilitative construction because what happens is once they go in, they're like, oh, wait, this is 100 and such building because these areas have been habit, you know, people have lived there for a really
right.
long time before the black people moved in and the white flight started. So it's just weird to see it kind of doing this reverse. It's like that cha-cha slide. Reverse.
Yeah, totally
it's
crazy.
Weird.
I'll just say that Twitter, this is my theme music for that Twitter game.
Uh-oh. Taking it to the
don't
club.
Don't want to be a player. I don't want to be a player no more. I'm not a player. I just fuck a lot.
I'm not a player. I just tweet a lot. But that Twitter game, I don't know what is going on, but... overnight, literally overnight, I've got like 600 like Saudi Arabian followers, all in Arabic. I don't fucking understand a word of what they're tweeting. I don't know why they're fucking following me. Someone on my timeline said that it was not a scam, but they're either spammers or they could be flooding me to try and get me suspended. Because if you have too many fake followers, you get like
suspended. You get suspended.
Is that people that follow me or people that I follow?
People that follow you.
So if I have too many fake followers following me, I get suspended?
Yeah, because I don't know how
it all works. Am I supposed to block them or something?
I told you that.
Good Lord. I got to block like 600 people now? That's going to take all day.
I told you that. It's serious.
Oh, jeez.
Because when you don't have that blue dot thing, they have like all these other rules for you.
Well,
the blue check or whatever.
I now have 600 Saudis following me. And I don't know if that's going to be like an FBI issue.
I just have very a rule like, guy. If I can't understand what you're tweeting, then you get blocked. Fuck do I want you on my timeline for?
Well, I
can't read anything you say.
They're just following me. I'm not following them. Well, so whatever my the case timeline. Is. I don't give a
if
shit.
If I can't understand what they're even saying or anything that has to do with them, I don't want... Their entire profile could be saying, like, racist, horrible shit, and you would have no idea.
I know, but they're just following me.
It doesn't matter. If someone looks at who's following you, it's still like, oh, these are the people that are following you?
All right.
Would you want somebody that was like, nigger, 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 following you, too?
Whoa, time out.
I'm just asking you.
I don't want that at all, but...
Well...
I'm just saying, that's not, you know...
Hold it. Time out.
Let's not even like breathe that into the atmosphere. Okay.
My point is, you don't know what they're saying.
All right, I will be blocking about 600 Arabic profiles that are following me.
Yeah.
At some point.
Well, let's do a real quick podcast standing. We are standing for the read this week.
Kid Fury,
specifically Kid Fury's just epic reading of one Piers Morgan.
And that wasn't even his read. He just fucking tore him down.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, the whole thing is a read.
Sure.
So, you know, he just really ripped him to shreds. He wrote a song about him. I'm not going to sing it. Go download the read. There, this is thereed.com. You can get him on iTunes. Just go. Kid Fury, Crystal. They're the best.
And Carl, you had said you were waiting to hear our take on Piers and all that, you know, bullshit. And there's a lot. Many people have been talking about it. I would say just listen to the read. Kid Fury basically says what needs to be said. Yeah, that, you know, he lock, stock, and two smoking barrels tore that shit down.
Not a goddamn thing else needs to be said.
Yeah,
they said everything that needs to be said, and I'm happy to let them talk for me.
Exactly.
On that particular subject.
And we haven't even watched any TV or anything because we were gone all weekend.
Do some catching up tonight.
Yeah, we'll have to do that. So I guess let's wrap it up, yeah?
Yeah, I think that's it. Episode 15 in the can.
The quinceanera.
So you're going to be getting the White Privilege podcast up today, right?
Yeah, last week. I'm way behind.
Episode 3.
Sorry, Drumbeat. Sorry, Amy. I suck.
And there is episode 1 of No Bitch Left Behind that's out there right now. We're going to be recording episode 2 this week. So look for that to come out soon. We got to do a vintage movie. We haven't done one.
Yeah, well, maybe I was thinking, I don't know what we want to do for the next vintage movie, but I wanted to do a musical, like Seven Brides or something.
Oh, we could do something like that. Well, that brings us to the end of episode 15. Again, you can find us online at interracialjohn.com. That's J-A-W-N. We're also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr. Just search at interracialjohn. That's J-A-W-N. And you can find me at Leslie Mack, M-A-C on Twitter, and at Very White Guy for Mike. We'll be back later this week with episode 16, and that's it.
Apparently we're on Tumblr now.
And we are on Tumblr now.
All right.
And Instagram, and Twitter, and Facebook.
Everywhere.
We're everywhere.
Good job, babe.
High five.